Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. Right out of the gate, I must apologize for the start of last night's show. A lot of people listen to this show on podcast, and I got some email today telling me that the music at the beginning of the show was not fading like it should. It was actually fading on my end, but apparently it didn't fade on the other end. So, beginning of the show, when I'm making this introduction, Ed Springsteen, MVM Radio and all that, you got the music real loud. Apparently some people didn't like it, so my apologies. Personally, I like the tune. I would have taken the extra few seconds of the music rather than having to listen to my mouth, but hey, it's our job to keep you happy, and that's what we're trying to do. In the meantime, with us tonight, you know, he's only getting one night on air this week, folks. Mr. Ed Martin, how are you, sir? Well, Ed, let's try this again, man. Your mic, Ed, your mic did not open up. Okay. It is now. Go ahead, man.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say, I thought you were going to go into some diatribe about how the other day when you were abducted by aliens that I told Dale that I liked his bumper music better than yours. So.
I like his bumper music better, too, but I can't use it, man. We're not going to step all over each other, you know. We've got to have our own identity. You know what I mean? But he has some good music.
Yeah, you're an individual, just like all other 7 billion people on the planet.
That's right.
You're an individual.
That's right. By God. And, you know, I found out last week you were a liberal, too. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'm a liberal?
Well, yeah. You didn't know that?
I can be.
Well, you said on air... When y'all was talking about the UN last week.
I always liked the line in the old movie Stripes where they said, when the recruiter says, "Are you gay?" And they looked at him and said, "No, but we're willing to learn." You know? So, yeah, I may not be a liberal, but hey, I'm willing to learn.
Well, apparently last week you guys were covering a show for me. By the way, thank you very much. That the black helicopters owned me last week, man. I tell you what, it was a nightmare for a couple of days, but it looks like we got everything worked out. But apparently one of the shows you guys were covering for me last week, might have been Tuesday night. I've already got a couple of calls and a couple of emails, you know, that I didn't know Mr. Libertarian Ed Martin was a liberal. And immediately I laughed. So the two phone calls I got, I was talking to him on the phone. I said, "Why would you say that Ed Martin is a liberal?" And apparently you guys talked. I have not listened to the shows in their entirety from last week. I apologize. I have not had time to. But apparently you guys were talking something about the UN last week. And you made a comment on air that, you know, you can see the UN getting involved in, like, our prison system or something along that effect. You know, so
yeah.
Immediately the response is, you know, that's a liberal idea. And if you said that, Ed, I don't know for sure. I haven't listened to the playback, but I can see why they would say that, man. Go ahead. Explain yourself to our audience.
Well, part of it, of course, is sarcasm. Because we do have, and being a libertarian and a true conservative, you know, hey, I'm letting people, for the most part, live their own lives. And you know, the war on drugs, let's face it, the prison industrial complex, especially the private prison industry, is funded by, you know, incarcerating nonviolent criminals. They got to keep their, I guess, their attendance rate up to 90% or so. And states do this a lot when they contract. So yeah, you know, America has more people in prison than pretty much any country in the world. So a bit of sarcasm, yeah, you know, can tell us how to do our business. But on a more serious note, yeah, you know, it's we're not perfect. And I'll be damned if the prison industrial and, you know, the prison industry, especially the private sector prison industry, is is above scrutiny. And obviously we're incapable of doing it ourselves, our government's in cahoots with the, you know, the prison industrial complex. So, you know, bring an outside observer in. You want added sarcasm? Let's bring some Mexican prison officials, and let's bring some Chinese prison officials and Russian prison. You know, let's make a, and get in here and have them look at us and say, "What's wrong with you people? These people aren't threats to your society. They're just cash cows. You know, get real."
Right. Well,
a bit of sarcasm, but I mean, God, if somebody's going to stand back and you know, call me a liberal and indirectly, I guess, or directly, in so doing, say they advocate the prison industrial complex, okay, knock yourself out, you know. I'll take the position of a liberal, and you can take the position of incarcerating people for profit.
Well, I'll believe you if you want me to, man. I just figured I'd bring that up. I was actually going to bring that up on you last night, but you weren't here. And, you know, I was like, wow. I mean, it was amazing to me when I got those calls. And again, I apologize to the listeners, because normally I would be listening to the replays by now. But I got two or three days behind last week thanks to, you know, the black helicopters, man. Hackers got me one more time. And, you know, they do this about every 6 months or so. They're able to get through whatever defenses I put up there. And they did last week. It didn't help when InSight went down through most of Louisville on Monday. Apparently, whatever I was blocking through my antivirus programs or different things that I use was working well. But once internet went down, for some reason or another, when it came back up, that's when it got me. Within 5 minutes of the internet coming back up and going online, bam, that was all she wrote. So, you know, so my apologies for that. But, yeah, I figured I better give you a chance, man, because, you know, I defend my partner Ed Martin to tell the whole world what a great libertarian he is. And then he goes out there and defends the UN. And I tell you, I was, you know, what could I do but put my head between my legs?
Well, rest assured, it was mostly sarcasm, but... Yeah, like I said, if given the option that if I have to choose between the UN coming in and investigating and writing a critique, as Amnesty International does often on our prison system, then so be it. Prison system is, you know, hell, we may end up there someday. Who knows? Indefinite detention, but it's a racket.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know what? We've got a lot more going on than just me and you talking about your liberalism. So, you know, let's first start out with this mess along the East Coast. You know, you guys on the East Coast, we do have listeners from up in Jersey and New York. If you have power right now, I'm not sure if they do or they don't, but we've got people that listen along the coast everywhere. And, you know, our prayers are definitely out to these guys. This Frankenstorm that they were calling it, man, this is the worst storm I think they've ever had. I mean, the subways in New York, New Jersey, I mean, the subways are gone. There's at least 7 tunnels that are gone in New Jersey. There's over, I think, the last I heard was somewhere around 4 or 5 million. It might be more than that. Well, I'm sorry, I'm reading a story now. It says there's at least 8.2 million that are without power. You know, they had a 14-foot surge, a wave from the ocean come over the top. I mean, it's incredible. Have you seen these pictures from this Hurricane Sandy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. Now, I have to be honest. There was a little bit of sarcasm I had to give when they showed pictures of the subways being flooded. And I says, well, you know, leave it to man to build something
underground
below sea level, and act surprised when this happens. It's a humbling storm. It's a huge storm. And I usually don't let something like this get in my way. I've been known to drive through squall lines and outrun tornadoes on business trips just for fun. Literally did do that one time. Saw a tornado way up in Indiana, and me and my brother in the car said, "Hit it!
Well,
let's outrun this bitch." But
I've outrun a tornado once, but it was not on purpose.
I gave up when I saw the snow band. I just said, you know what? I do not want to die on a back roads, you know, on a back road in Virginia somewhere in an 8-foot snowdrift in a you know, in a little Camry. It's just not how I want to go. I got a lot of business in that area, and you know, I'm concerned. I've called them all. They all have phones, conveniently enough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just told them, I said I was going to cancel my trip because I did not want to be that guy who you had to come in to work for, power or not, you know, to visit one of your suppliers. Is it just, you take care of your business, we'll get that taken care of later. This goes beyond business. Stay safe.
Well, that's exactly it. Speaking of staying safe, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Well, not really, but it falls in the top category of dumb media personalities. Anderson Cooper. Everybody knows who Anderson Cooper is from CNN. Well, he thinks he's a god. CNN thinks he's a god, so they give him a daytime talk show. Of course, the daytime talk show just got canceled, so he'll finish out this season and it's done. So he was only able to stay on 2 years because they can't get an audience. Nobody wants to listen to this daytime talk show of Anderson Cooper's. And who can blame him? I mean, I don't want to listen to anything that's remotely involved with anybody from CNN because they're that stupid of me. But he does his show live. So this morning he's doing a live show with three people in the audience. Now, here's where the stupidity comes in. Are you ready for this? As part of his show, I guess they were going to do some kind of a giveaway or something. But, you know, he told everybody, announced during his show, I guess yesterday or before then, you know, to the audience, to anybody that was going to come to his show live and be part of the live audience, do not come. We've got a hurricane out there. We've got floods. We've got this. We've got that. Do not come to the studio to listen to this show live. It's unsafe. Well, lo and behold, three people decide they're going to show up anyway. One lady was on vacation out of Colorado, so she decided she was going to go, and two locals. So these three people show up. They're in the live audience, and right there on TV, the three people live audience, the Anderson Cooper had already told to stay the hell away from here because it's not safe to be here. He rewards those three people for showing up with a 10-day all-expense-paid trip to Costa Rica. Now, what kind of a message does that send?
Yeah. The next time there's a storm, or the weather's inclement, or it's dangerous, show up. You might get something for free. Yeah.
Exactly. So he's telling all these people who like to do that stuff anyway, you know, go ahead and risk your life to come in, you know, for a free box of cheese or, you know, a free trip to the local Walmart or, hey, we might even throw in Costa Rica. I mean, you never know what the prize is going to be, but you know, I just can't believe that. And they thought it was just a great thing, so they're giving these people a trip. That is such a conflicting message. It's the same old crap that I expect from these so-called media people. But you do not reward behavior like that, folks, because then you tell everybody it's acceptable behavior. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. He just made it acceptable behavior, which is, yet again, one of those reasons you can't like Anderson Cooper. I just thought that was funny when you said stay safe. I thought I'd put that out there. Let's get into some real business, man. Let's talk about some local elections. Last night we talked a little bit about District 12 and 14 because, you know, that's my good buddy Rick Blackwell in 12. And, you know, we talked about that. We handicapped. We talked about 12 and 14 last night. But let's get into some of these other races right here in Jefferson County because I tell you, one of the most glaring things that sticks out to me when I look at this ballot for Jefferson County is how many races there is no opponent in. For example, Commonwealth's attorney. We knew this back in the primary. No Republican filed to run for Commonwealth's attorney. So Tom Wine gets it by default. Tom Wine's not bad, but, you know, he's certainly not the best for the job. Jefferson County Circuit Court Clerk. David Nicholson, insider, he gets this job by default. No Republican filed to run for that seat. Now, these county commissioners in a B and a C district, come on, get real. They don't mean anything. I'll be glad when they finally amend the Constitution to get rid of them because it's just stupid to even have them on a ballot. It's a waste of paper. But more concerning, when you get into Louisville politics, is you start looking at the Metro Council races. Ed, would you believe that there is no Republican opponent in the first six Metro Council district races, 1 through 6? That's alarming.
Well, I believe it. I believe it in part because as we've gone on a tear before, the lack of support, lack of from the party, you know, yeah, it's losing districts. But I can tell you this, as a libertarian that has had to gather up 700 signatures that, you know, because some are going to get invalidated or. For someone like Ken Molman that has to get 5,000 signatures to get on the ballot, you know, it's like, guys, can you get anybody just a paper, as we say, you know, amongst third parties, just a paper candidate? Just, it's only two signatures, and, you know, it's a small race, so I don't even know what the entry fee, I guess you could say, is the ballot processing fee. It's $50, $100?
Yeah,
really?
I mean, yeah, the fee isn't anything.
Two signatures and $100, you know, I guess, something like that. The party should put the money up and say, hey, look, put a name on there, you know. Find somebody with a cool name, you know, Clint Eastwood or something, Rocky this or something. Just put a name on there.
Well,
you know,
see,
what the hell? Find somebody named Michael Mouse or Mickey Mouse can run, you know, something.
Right.
But it galls me because You know, and like our good friend Michael Lewis. These guys, a lot of these people got to get at least 100 signatures, and in some cases 5,000 signatures to get on a ballot. It only takes two. You're a member of a major party. You know, organize, find somebody in there, get on the ballot. And, you know, I can tell you as a candidate, and you can tell people as a candidate, it's worth the price of admission. It's fun. It really is. If you're not mortgaging the house and, you know, something like that. Some people do that.
I mean,
you don't have skeletons in the closet that are coming out. You know, if you're clean and you just be realistic about it, it's worth the price of admission.
Well, you know, I don't even have to have somebody that's clean and they'll have skeletons. I mean, let's face the reality here. Nobody that walks on this earth has a halo on their head. We've all got problems, including me. But the thing that kills me here is the Republican Party, you know, gripes because the Metro Council has so many Democrats, they can't get a fair shake, and they just let six districts not have a candidate to run against the Democrat. The independents gripe because they can't, you know, get on the ballot for whatever reason. You know, with nobody running against Attica Woods and Scott, surely, for example, in District 1 or Barbara Shanklin in District 2, you know, she's actually going to get reelected by default, and then she's going to have her hearing right after. This is crazy. But you look at these districts, and it's like, what in the hell's going on? Because your independents aren't in it. Republicans didn't take time to get in it. I don't see a libertarian in any of these races. You know, and that is the problem for me. Everybody wants to sit, and we talk about this all the time. Everybody wants to sit and moan and groan and whine and complain, you know, because things are the way they are. They're moaning, groaning, whining, and complaining because they don't have a candidate, you know, with real issues. All they have are these wannabes like, oh, I don't know, Brian Simpson. All right? You have all of these different things, but they don't take the time to even put their name on a damn ballot, you know, and at least be in the race to see how it works. Even if you lose that first time out, it's great experience. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, as I said, when you're a Republican or a Democrat, it takes two signatures, and that's all it takes.
Right.
And so I mean, for them now, you know, in some defense of anybody else, it's you know, it's 100 signatures. It's maybe more. I don't know, for you know, the district council races. But
I'll have to look it up.
But as I say, the numbers are a little more daunting, and truthfully, in some of those districts, there are in some cases so few libertarians that there may not be. It's conceivable that there aren't any in District 1.
But there's Republicans there.
But nonetheless, like I say, I'm with you. The Republicans, guys, it takes two signatures. You know, you and I have talked about that, you know, off air a lot. Two signatures. How attractive is that, you know, coming from guys that have had to collect hundreds upon hundreds of signatures, you know, over a couple of elections, thousands of signatures to get on a ballot.
Right.
It's like, really? Two?
Right.
That's all it takes is two?
Well, I mean, and that's exactly it. And they don't take advantage of it. I can't understand how a Republican can sit here and whine because they don't have an office when they've got all these local offices that they didn't recruit, support, or anything else. You know, now people, you know, we want to continue to talk about how, you know, well, you guys just hate liberals. No, this is a great example of the Uniparty. This is a great example of that. Why did they not run somebody in District 2, 4, 6, or 10? Why didn't somebody step up to the plate? And I'll tell you why. District 2 is Barbara Shanklin. Barbara Shanklin is dirty. I'm going to tell you that right now. You can think what you want to think. Call me any name you want to. She's a black female. You're just going to black females dirty. You're a racist. No, she's a dirty politician. That's just the way it is. Deal with it. And we've got charges against her now, which should have her impeached the same way that Judy Greene was, but she's going to get away with this because it's all part of that collusion, and she knows where the bodies are buried. Judy Greene heard where the bodies were buried but didn't know where they were. Barbara Shanklin does. She's not going to get impeached. Okay, so people are scared of her because she's a dirty politician. David Tandy in Metro Council District 4, are you kidding me? This guy is running unopposed. This great lawyer who's got Washington connections thanks to his wife, this great lawyer goes to Baltimore, Maryland, signs a non-disclosure agreement with a Cordish group. We'll get into a little bit of that here shortly. You know, comes back to Louisville and says, well, I believe everything they said. We're supposed to take his word for it. He's spending most of his time in Washington right now anyway because he doesn't want to be here. He's just waiting for an official appointment from Obama if he gets reelected. This guy don't have competition. You get into District 6 with David James. I like David James. You know, I've also challenged David James publicly just a couple of years ago. Why doesn't he have an opponent? You know, this makes no sense. District 10, Jim King, no opponent. You know, I don't want to hear the Republicans gripe at me anymore or try to tell me how hard it is to be a Republican when they're not even willing to take a chance and put somebody on a damn ballot if for no other reason at all, get the experience, make sure you learn what you're doing. You know what I mean? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, truthfully, it's like, gosh, it's the Republican, you know, and we've questioned that too, the local party leadership. It's like, guys, really, I mean, it's the purported big money in the Republicans, and there are some elements of big money. I mean, you would think at some point the party could say, look, anybody that runs, we get you two signatures, we'll pay for your filing fee or whatever, and, no matter what, you'll go meet one of our big wigs and you get $1,000. But you put a couple hundred signs out. No big deal, you know. And like I say, it's worth the price of admission. You get a couple quick TV interview spots. They're fun, and you never know with the Career Journal editorial board. Maybe you get interviewed. Maybe you don't. But you get out there. You get the. Yeah, it gives you an excuse on election night to order pizza and, of course, buy beer the day before and have a party at your house, you know.
I think I may be the only unelected person that has an R behind their name in Louisville to ever get a CJ endorsement. The Courier actually endorsed me in the last race I ran for State House during the Republican primary. And I love the way they termed it because they said I was very humane. Which means that I was, you know, I had an open mind on some of the social issues, you know, like the whole abortion issue. You know, I'm right to life. But in cases of rape or incest, yeah, I can go along with an abortion. So, you know, because I'm workable, I guess, I got that endorsement. But it was very fascinating. And as soon as that endorsement came out, I knew I was beat. It was a given. But here's another race for you. This one is totally beyond me. We've got a convicted felon working for Metro Government and IPL, abusing and harassing citizens in our community. He avoided jail just a couple of years ago by making a plea agreement that allowed him to retire with dignity, and now he's back at work there. And his wife happens to be Metro Councilwoman, one of the biggest pieces of garbage on the council, in my opinion, Metro Councilwoman Madonna Flood. There's not an independent in that race. There's not a Republican in that race. And I don't want to hear anybody call me, well, we've got write-ins in these races. Screw the write-ins. The write-ins are irrelevant. If they're not on the ballot, they don't have a shot. I don't even want to talk about that. You know what I mean? So, you know, why is Madonna Flood, with all the negatives out there, all the known, you know, things about her and her husband and the way that they run business, and Madonna has been complicit in helping John harass people. I can attest to that. I've talked to these people. You know, and nobody runs against her. That makes no sense. This is just a pathetic display of a local ballot, in my opinion. But let's get to what we do know. Metro Council District 8, you've got Tom Owen against Kirk Jacobs. Everybody should know Kirk Jacobs' name from Landscape or Leadership Landscape or something like that he does around his town, or so he says. What do you think about that race? Has Kirk Jacobs got a chance against Tom Owen?
No. Brad Matthews got steamrolled. And, of course, you know, to me, a lot of it gets down to, you know, name recognition is big. But as we've talked about time and time again, you've got the slush fund. You've got the discretionary spending. I'm sorry. When you're up against a guy like Tom Owen that's been in there for over a decade, you're up against a guy who's you know, in one form or another, spread over, you know, a couple $1 million around to cover his bets. And then, you know, it's funny to say, you get that curb fixed in front of your house, as long as that curb's still fixed, you know, you're going to remember Tom. So, yeah, it just incumbency, especially when it has an old school patronage program in it, like a discretionary fund and the fact that we don't track it very well, we don't account for it very well. In most cases for city council, you're going to find out it's just hard to unseat these guys because they have really feathered their nest well.
Well, Jacobs has no shot. I mean, he's obviously in one of the most liberal spots in this whole town. I mean, let's think about that. You know what I mean? He's in the Highlands area and stuff like that. Tom Owens owns District 8 for as long as he wants it. You're not going to vote against Grandpa that can sit there and tell you stories, because Tom's a historian on Louisville. Tom can spend hours mesmerizing you with history and everything else. He comes off as this sweet little old grandpa who knows everything. You know, people on the inside in politics know the real Tom Owen. But the public that's going out there and electing him don't. And that's always going to work for Tom. And Kurt Jacobs, I mean, let's face facts here, folks. I got to tell you this. You know, Kurt is not exactly what he's trying to portray himself to be either. I like my candidates to have some kind of cojones. I like my candidates to step up to the plate and do the right thing and stand and run for the right reasons and back up their positions and back up what they feel. I don't like them making excuses. Now, at the expense of going into some personal stuff, I won't go there, but Kurt Jacobs does not fit the criteria for me personally that I think he should have to represent us. If you're going to represent people, then you've got to first represent yourself, and I don't think he does a good job of that. District 12 we talked about last night, District 14 last night. I'll give you one quick one on 12, though, because you didn't really get a chance. Blackwell versus Rosenberger.
Blackwell, again, it's name recognition. It's name recognition, and it's the ongoing patronage slush fund. And like I say, it was so discouraging for me to see what happened to a couple of worthwhile upstarts last in the primary season, and mm-hmm. I think that's just what they're up against. It's good old boy patronage, and Blackwell just flattens him.
Well, Blackwell is seasoned. Rosenberger is not. I mean, that's a big deal for me. Rosenberger has a long way to go, and, you know, he's just not ready for prime time yet, in my opinion. He's a great guy, and I think he could be doing something down the road, but he's not ready for prime time right now. Here's the one I want to watch, and this is District 16. It's pitting Kelly Downard, a guy that I've got a lot of great respect for, against Democrat Tim Martin. Tim Martin describes himself as a fiscally conservative Democrat. So he thinks he's taking on Kelly Downard. Now, I don't know what he considers a fiscally conservative Democrat, and he thinks that's a great thing because the liberals on the council will eat him alive. He's certainly going to go with the liberal agenda. Kelly Downard is about as fiscally conservative and a guy that can work with you on either side of the aisle. He is probably the most representative on the Metro Council as somebody who's bipartisan. I like Kelly Downard. I think this guy has done a great job since he's been there, and I think he's going to continue to do a great job if reelected. But I'm being told that Martin, actually, there's a chance that Tim Martin might upset him. Have you heard anything on this, or where do you stand on that race?
No, I don't see that happening, because I think Downard even got the CJ endorsement, and he's an incumbent. And I think you've got name recognition, and truthfully, in a state that's not real Barack Obama friendly, I just think he's going to do all right. I think the Republicans are going to come out enough to put him back in. And I think Downard, I think it was a surprise. I think Downard will put him down pretty hard and pretty easy.
Well, I think he will, too. You know, I'm going to agree with you there. I think Downard wins this pretty easily. But man, there's
like
a lot
of... The other guy's got a great last name. I'll give you that much.
I was trying to see how long it was going to take you to get there. All right, Metro Council, 18th District. And I've got to tell you, this pits Tea Party Republican Marilyn Parker, I guess, a Democratic guy, Teague Ridge. This is wide open. Parker actually won the primary, which surprised everybody. And, you know, now she's going to run against this non-known name in Teague Ridge. Parker has name recognition for whatever that's worth, whether it's positive or negative, depending on which side of the fence you're on. Who wins this race and why?
Parker.
Why?
I think you got name. I think it's one, it comes more down to the it's name recognition for sure, because she won a primary against an incumbent, which has never happened before since Metro Council went to the districts in the reorganization. She's got the endorsement of most, you know, she did beat Ackerson with the endorsement of most of the sitting council members. So I think that counts for something, you know. And I don't live in that district, but I cross through that district a lot. And there's a lot more out there, it seems, with, you know, a lot more media and stuff out there for her. So mm-hmm. I think Yeah, I think the district is conservative enough. It's going to go that route. I mean, they went that route to win the primary. So unless there's some surge of Democrat voters in the district, you know, and it's a teeter totter district. It's not like solid like 19, like solid Republican, you know, ridiculously solidly Republican. But or you know, the other way, like District 1, ridiculously Democrat. But I think Parker gets it on name recognition. You know, she's running from some ghosts and some skeletons in the closet. She's staying, you know, she's shying away from a lot of the birther and conspiracy theorists and everything. The socialist, if it doesn't agree with you, kind of rhetoric that may have preceded her in the past. And I think she's put it far enough behind her. If her opponent had much more money and could do a negative campaign against her, I think it would be a much closer race. But I think she's going to beat him pretty well.
I don't think it would take a lot of money to beat Marilyn Parker, to be honest with you. You know, when you compare the primary that she ran in, I mean, she ran against Ackerson. You know, a conservative who was liberal, who was a liberal. I mean, that's the thing. You're right. District 18 is a conservative district, I think, overall. You know, if they had somebody credible on the Democratic side, Marilyn Parker would be beat hands down, and it wouldn't take a lot of money. You know, when you're talking about the things that she said or done in the past, we're not talking about years ago. We're talking about recent past. I mean, these were things she was saying and doing during the primary. And right after the primary, Marilyn Parker was still out there trying to spend more time talking about state and national issues than she was local and Louisville issues, which is what the Metro Council is supposed to represent. So, you know, if there was a bigger name or credible candidate on Democratic side, she'd be in trouble. But I'm inclined to agree with it. I think Parker's going to win 18. You know, 18, you just have to see what you get the next 4 years, because I don't know which Marilyn Parker's going to show up. I really don't. District 20, Republican candidate Stuart Benson, he's also the incumbent, versus John Joseph Cohen or James Joseph Cohen, whichever one you want to call him. What about that race?
Well, you know what? That district skirts my district. I'm real familiar with that. That's my hometown, J-Town. I think Benson is, again, you know, voters don't unload an incumbent for, you know, for no good reason. And Benson is a solid, middle-of-the-road kind of guy. It's a, you know, and the district is, it's a diverse district. It's working class and upper class, a lot of business in the area. And I can't for the life of me think of anything Benson has really done that's going to cost him the election. Cohen's appears to be running a fairly strong campaign, but not as strong as Benson. And I think, once again, I think District 20 got themselves a candidate who doesn't embarrass them, and he represents pretty well. I mean, it's as far as, you know, when you say you got a representative that just makes sure the garbage gets picked up and the potholes are filled, you can't really complain about that district. So I think he's doing a good job, not embarrassing the constituents, you know, Judy Green. And at that point, I think he wins. I think it's going to be a close one because Cohen does seem, at least on the media end, as far as yard signs and everything in this end of town, it seemed, you know, very recognizable kind of name. And it's out there. He's putting it out there, but I just see more Benson. And like I say, if I were in that district, which I'm very close to it, I would probably vote Benson just because he hasn't embarrassed anybody, which, you know, nowadays, pretty sad, but that's the barometer you work with. You think, has my representative embarrassed me?
one of the hard problems in – yeah, like this is a problem I know, folks. But one of the hardest things that you have to deal with when you do what I do every day is you know where the skeletons are. You know where the bodies are buried. You know who held the shovel. You know what I mean? In this case, you know, Stuart Benson, he's milquetoast, for lack of a better word for me. He's generic. I mean, I don't see anything out of Benson. I've never seen anything out of Benson. Have had a couple of conversations with Benson through the years. And there's nothing about him that really hits me as saying this guy is a representative or a good councilman. Standing out of the way and letting things happen just so you don't have to deal with the fallout of standing up does not make a good council person. Benson is just your average run-of-the-mill, you know, guy that I see in office as a guy who's just kind of sitting there, just riding it out for as long as he can.
Yep.
You know, and just let it go. He's not doing anything, and that's not representation.
And things are in his district. That's kind of okay because, you know, the J-Town area where he's at is one of the areas that, in spite of everything, is doing all right. So,
well, see, he's got a great
crime or development or the economy or whatever. So, you know, he has the good fortune of being in a district that is it's kind of. You know, I want to say it's like District 19 with Jerry Miller, who I think the world of Jerry Miller. But to be honest, it's sort of a self-sufficient district. You know, I would imagine a high percentage of people that live in the district don't worry about trash pickup because they pay for it themselves. You know, it's like, look, if it snows, pile the roads, and we'll call it even. That's kind of how some of these districts are.
Well, see, here's the thing for me. You know, I think Cohen, I think there's one or two seats that the Democrats can actually win on the council right now. And this is one of them. I think they can actually pick this up in a Republican Benson if Cohen is doing his job right. This guy who's running against him, you know, it's Joe Cohen. He's got a good resume, but he's also got plans. You know, where Stuart Benson kind of sits back and just lets things happen. And, for example, one of Benson says he'd like to freeze the discretionary spending. And I'm actually getting this from the CJ on this particular story, folks. You guys can read it if you want to. But Benson said he wants to freeze discretionary spending until the economy improves. He would like to see a significant decrease in discretionary spending, and he wants a more thorough review of government services to understand how the cost of the delivery of those services compares with adjacent cities. That's a lot of gibberish that says nothing. If Benson wanted to freeze discretionary spending, he's had the opportunity to put that up for a vote. If he wants to see a decrease in discretionary spending, he's had the opportunity to do something with that. If he doesn't understand anything about government services, and he hasn't done a review of government services that he said he wants now after all this time, the guy's a brick. So this is just typical election year rhetoric. Cohen, however, on the other side, and this is where Cohen's doing a pretty good job, you know, he keeps talking about the standard stuff, improvements to roads and sewers. Everybody wants to use that. But he's also talking about a 25-year long-term plan for the district. He talks about how this is a developing district, and he puts a lot of talk into the rural land and what they can do. He wants to set some kind of a 25-year plan together, sort of like a Cornerstone 2020. And I think that, you know, that's a new vision that they're not used to in that district. You know, so, and then you talk about experience. You know, Cohen is a law enforcement. You know, he's a graduate of the University of Louisville's Law School, the first director of the Kentucky Insurance Fraud Investigation Division, certified police instructor for the FBI Academy. You know, when you look at the problems that are going on in Louisville now with rising crime everywhere and everything else, this guy can bring a great perspective, you know, and really, frankly, Stuart Benson just doesn't spend any time doing anything. This is one of those seats that I think that they can ultimately pick up. I think Stuart Benson's in trouble.
And like I say, Cohen seems to be running a fairly strong campaign. If Benson wins, it'll be just because, like I said, set the bar low. He hasn't embarrassed anybody.
Well, you know, yeah, I understand that, but that's pathetic. Now, here's another race that I think that the Republicans are in trouble on. This is District 22 with Robin Engel. Robin Engel is facing John Zeller Jr., or Robert John Zeller Jr. is his full name. Now, Zeller Jr. isn't a known name. I mean, he's not somebody who's got this great name recognition. He doesn't really have the resume to say that he's been here forever doing this or that. Okay. Robin Engel has been a member of the Metro Council since it opened, you know, since we went to this. His biggest area of priority is Fern Creek, et cetera. Robin Engel, to me, is somebody that can't be trusted. And that's the problem. Now, I don't know if the Fern Creek residents have picked up on that or not. Personally, and this is what's so hard about being me and knowing where the skeletons are. I sit in on a lot of meetings. I actually conduct a lot of meetings, and I get involved in a lot of issues in the community that I don't talk to a lot of people about. Some of those involve charitable gaming. Some of those involve closed-door meetings with different groups with a smoking ban and things like that. And I've actually sat there where Robin Engel has lied to my face, said he was going to vote a certain way, and then that very same night, as soon as he went to the council, voted opposite of what he promised his group he was going to do. Now, I'm not going to tell you guys what those votes were, but this is something that's interesting to me because Robin has proven that he can't be trusted, that he's going to lie to whatever group he has to lie to keep power, you know. You know, he's a native of Wisconsin. Now, he's been in Louisville since 1986, so I don't hold that against him. But I have a problem with somebody who will look you in the eye and lie to you to your face and not see anything wrong with that. And Robin Engel has done that. And I think a lot of the people in his district know that. There's also some other questionable behavior on Robin Engel that I won't go into relationships with right now. But it's interesting to me. And, oh, by the way, if you're a real conservative, a true Republican, then you need to ask Engel, how come he works so great with Jim King, and how come he keeps getting the Appropriations Committee appointment from Jim King as a Republican? You know, this is interesting. What is the trade-off on that? Because that's not something that happens lightly in the Democratic mafia here in Louisville. There's a lot of things there about Robin Engel I don't trust, and the question is whether the voters will. Now, on the flip side, Zeller. You know, Zeller has, you know, really not raised much money. He's not spending anything out there. He's not doing a lot at all, you know. But it's going to really come down to the anti-Engel vote. I don't think Zeller has a chance. I think Engel wins anyway. But, you know, those are things people need to know. How about you?
Yeah, I think, again, incumbency, you've got a relative unknown. Right now, for me, right now, it's Cohen is the one that has the best chance because
right.
From what I see out there, he's running a fairly well-financed campaign. So,
mm-hmm.
And like I say, in the Maryland Parker race, if they had the money to go negative, if their opponent did, it would be big trouble.
Right. Right, and that's the interesting thing. And that's the interesting thing, because Engel does have a lot of people in the community who are just thankful that he's got some competition. And I think that that probably, if there's a pitfall in Zeller's campaign strategy, that's probably it. I think he thinks he's going to get the anti-Engel vote, and that's going to be enough to win. And maybe he's not doing enough work, and maybe he's not collecting enough money. We'll know Tuesday. But I think Engel's going to win it by default, because if Zeller's not out there working, there's really nobody to vote for. You can ask Brian Simpson about that and his race against Larry Clark. So we've got some situations here. But those two seats are the ones I see as most vulnerable, just because Stuart Benson really is just milquetoast. He's just going through the motions. And Robin Engel just can't be trusted, and there's a lot of people that know it. District 26, Sarah Provancher is a Republican candidate. Brent Ackerson, Democrat incumbent candidate. Your thoughts?
Ackerson, name recognition, a relatively Democratic district, so, yeah, Ackerson, easy.
I think Ackerson wins it very, very easily. Brent didn't have a hard time getting that seat in the first place, and he hasn't done a bad job with it. You know, like him, love him, or hate him. The Ackerson name can kind of be twofold, thanks to John. But Brent has done a great job through the years of distancing himself from that situation with John. So I think Brent's going to win it. I think he's going to win it easily. You know, I haven't really seen a lot in Sarah Provancher that would tell me any different than that. So I'm with you on that one. Okay.
You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, though, mm-hmm. when unopposed, a lot of these people don't have experience. But, you know, they went out, and especially if they're Republicans or Democrats, went out and they got their two signatures, and they got on the ballot. So, you know, you got to
sure.
say right off the top, kudos
sure.
to them for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's kind of depressing, but at the same time, I can't sit here and say that that's not the right thing to do, because, again, the Republicans aren't running anybody in half the damn seats that are up, and that just drives me completely bonkers. There is no reason to have an election for office and run unopposed. None. And that just disgusts me. All right, let's move on to a few other things. Because I tell you, Ed, there's always something going on in this town. There really is. You know, when we look at the different things going on in town right now, I'm going to come right back to Kentucky Kingdom and Ed Hart. We touched on it last night. Folks, you have got to understand the way that this game plays. And I'm dead serious. You can go to LouisvillePolitics.com. Check out today's article. There's some links throughout the article that will help you understand the game with Kentucky Kingdom. But the bottom line is, Ed Hart has to lose. He has to lose for the Cordish group. Now, there's some people saying out there, one don't have to do with the other, and you're full of garbage. No, I'm not. I've been telling everybody this game for years. I've already been proven right on it on more than one occasion. But here's the deal. Cordish group owns your Lieutenant Governor, Jerry Abramson, lock, stock, and barrel. Cordish Group owns your Governor, Steve Beshear, lock, stock, and barrel. That's known. We can give you the ties, like Beshear's law firm, and his son works for the law firm that's representing Cordish, and where the money goes and all that. We can give you that. We can give you the ties to Jerry and his lovely wife. you know, and her ties to Cordy thanks to his little agreement with that. You can read the Courier-Journal story from this weekend where Chris Ottson, to give credit where it's due, outlined the profit-sharing agreement that Cordy gets all the money and we don't get a dime. You can read all of this. Oh, I know it was. It's totally unreal. But it's the same thing we've been telling everybody for years. But because the Courier-Journal says it now, oh, it must be true. You know, it's amazing how smart mainstream media gets when they finally catch up to where we've been at forever. Well, one of the things in here that they're not telling you about, this all comes down to gambling dollars. That's the nutshell of every bit of it. And here's the reality. There is only so much money available for entertainment in this community. Now, you can get your conventions. You can do these things. All right, but there's only so much money available for entertainment on a daily basis in this community. And that daily spending is what keeps this entertainment industry alive. They can't shut their doors 10 months a year and then for 2 months a year host conventions and just shut their doors again. It doesn't work that way. Three major sources of revenue. The Kentucky Lottery is number one in gambling entertainment revenue. Charitable gaming is number two in gambling entertainment revenue. The Kentucky horse industry is number three in gambling entertainment revenue, and they were way behind, okay? That's why they want slots. They want to bring up more money. Even though Churchill Downs and the horse racing industry is making money, they want more. The problem is this. Cordy's group wanted 4th Street Live so that they could get the casinos and the gambling money. They could care less about that entertainment district down there. They're making some profit on it, every bit of which, 5% of which comes straight off the top, that they get to put in their pockets without even considering whether Louisville should get a kickback or not as part of their profit-sharing agreement. And there's some other loopholes in there you can read about as well. And by the way, there's a link in our story. But Cordish is getting their profits off the top and showing a law so that Louisville can't enjoy anything for profit-sharing, even though we've committed millions of dollars to these guys. And this is by design. You have to starve the beast. Cordish doesn't mind playing long haul so that they can get casino gambling for their 4th Street Live entertainment corridor. But in order to do that, they have to make a couple of things happen. One, they cannot go after the Kentucky Lottery. The Kentucky Lottery is a constitutional thing, so they can't go after trying to shut the lottery down and take that money and then try to bring in casinos and push that money to that direction. Two, they can't go after the horse racing in Kentucky. That's our signature industry. They can't do that. So they've got to figure out a way to get their entertainment dollars from somewhere. So what they've been doing through a concentrated effort for the last several years, and I've talked about this ad nauseum, go to edspringston.com, you can look that one up as well, is they've been trying to shut out charitable gaming. If you get rid of charitable gaming, then those dollars are going to be split, assumedly, through gambling interest through Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Lottery. Until we get casinos. Now, you bring casinos in, you've got to satisfy the horsemen because the Kentucky horse racing industry is not going to allow somebody else to come in here and take the entertainment dollars and the gambling dollars away from them. So that's why there was a deal made between Keith and Patrick Neely. Former Governor Brereton Jones started this deal. I was in on that conversation. I wrote the legislation to satisfy them that they lied to our face about, went behind our back, and worked with Larry Clark. Okay? These guys are scum. So this is the way it is. They want to shut out all competition. If Ed Hart opens up Kentucky Kingdom like he wants to do, that's a few million dollars in entertainment that they're not going to get. Now, they don't care if Kentucky Kingdom has roller coaster rides. They know that guys like me aren't going to ride the roller coasters. I'm going to go to the casino. I'm going to go to the track. Or I'm going to play the lottery. But they also know that if I've got kids, young teenage kids, I'm probably going to have to buy a season pass. So that $400 or $500 I would normally spend at the casino, I'm going to spend on a season pass Kentucky Kingdom to take care of my kid. That's how it works. They want to see Kentucky Kingdom shut down. They want Kentucky Kingdom leveled to become a parking lot, not because it makes money, but because it makes money for gambling. So when they bring gambling in here, and they're going to, folks, that's why they bought off David Williams, and don't think Bob Stivers is going to stick to that issue as hard as Williams did. I promise you he's not. But that's what the game is right now, and they're trying to keep Ed Hart out because of it. I don't think it has so much to do with the personal aspect as it do that if Abramson and Beshear don't deliver on gambling to Cordish, there is some deep trouble. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, you know, I would first off say, you know, Ed Hart must be a saint. Because I'm here to tell you, and he's obviously got a lot of money, but if somebody turns me down and obviously is blackballing me for any reason in that in business, I just look at them and say, you know what, there are no shortage of places to put my money. You know, have a nice day and walk away. But Ed Hart keeps trying, you know. you got to give him credit there. Now, as far as casinos go, you know, I tell you, I don't really think it's something that could happen, but if they were to scrap that place out, again, you know, I was just joking with Dale the other night, if they scrap it out, I said, I want to go watch. I want to see it. Kind of fun seeing things get torn apart. I do it with the machines often enough, but it would be interesting, you know, watching that metal come down from real high. But you know, sometimes I wonder, because you look at the location of that, and it's like right next to the Fair and Exposition Center where all the conventions come. It's you get a couple of hotels around, decent population centers all around it. It's got an airport across from it. Now, I've been to a few casinos up north and stuff where it's like they seem awfully damn close to the airport, you know? Like, well, you get off, you're bored, hey, let's go roll a few dice. So, you know, it's in a hell of a place. Maybe it would be. I don't think they would actually build a casino on the Kentucky Fair area, but then again, they might. You know, it could definitely be an income generator for the fair board or something. And Lord knows they could stand to get some, you know, revenue.
Well, they're not going to put a casino on a Kentucky Fairground. But what they're going to do is if they get rid of Kentucky Kingdom. That's one
never.
Entertainment.
I'm saying probably not. But as you know, you do look at it. Parking. Yeah, I guess. And the thing I do look at is you know, I don't look so much at the money, but it just blows me away that you get prominent people like Ed Glasscock, too. I mean, he's in on this. And the heir to the Schneider Empire, he's in on this. Mm-hmm. And they've got some good people behind it. It does make you wonder at some point. It's like, my God, they're looking to put how much money into it? They're looking to improve it? And they can't get anybody to say yes. I mean, you know, you start thinking, you look at the deal Cordes got, you know, you get all of
right.
4th Street for what, a buck?
and they get a 99-year lease.
Ed Hart throwing tens of millions of dollars at it, saying, hey, let me fix this dump up and make it, you know, make it work for the state.
Well, see, that's
and
it.
You and can't them to do it, yet they can sell a portion of downtown for a dollar. And then like the old Louisville Gardens, it's like you go ahead and call Cordes anything, and you sit there and you look at a guy like Ed Hart struggling so hard to open this damn rusting Hulk up, you know, before it gets too far gone, and he can't get their attention with $50 million that other people can buy stuff for a dollar in this town.
Oh, no. He's got their attention. That's the problem. They don't want the attention. They want to shut him out for Cordes. That's exactly what this is, folks. This is a long-range plan for casino gambling. We are going to get casino gambling, and I've told people 1,000 times, I have got no moral problem with casino gambling. I really don't. I have no problem as long as it's done on a fair and equitable basis and as equal opportunity for all. The problem with all of the things that they've been trying to do with casino gambling is they're trying to tie it all up with Cordes Group, and Cordes Group is throwing Churchill a bone by giving them a few slots in their daggone racetracks. That's all this is, and that's not fair to all the other people in the state. That's the problem I've got with casino gambling. Now, when you look at this, you just pointed this out, Ed. You've got Bruce Lunsford, you know, a successful businessman. You've got Ed Glasscock. Mary Mosley, the head of the Schneider Company, as you know. These are all successful business people right here at home. Right here at home. Hart has already said he's not going to ask the state for any cash at all. He's already put another investment in. He's the only one who made an offer this time. Every time they bring this up and they keep trying to go through this offer game, everybody drops out. Holiday World told us last time that they can't work with the state because they just keep adding ridiculous stuff. So Hart is going to propose investing $120 million of this group's money, $50 million immediately, $70 million over the next 30 years. He's going to double the size of the water park, add $15 million roller coaster, 3 other new rides. Okay? All of this is a no-brainer for anybody, unless your name is Bashir and Abramson. And the only logical explanation is that it comes down to Cordes and protecting their interest at Cordes. And out-of-town mafia venture. Yeah, I said the word mafia. It has to be. Because there's no other way to explain this. This is incredible. check out the article at LouisvillePolitics.com, folks. We've got the links in there. You can read about this. You can go to edspringsta.com, use Cordish in the search bar. You're going to find more things than you need to know. But the bottom line is, time is on the side of Bashir and Abramson. For every day that they wait, for every day that they wait, for every time that they screw hard and turn this into another six-month venture where they're going to come back again in 6 months to take new bids, that equipment and the infrastructure deteriorates, making it more costly of a project to the point where the costs are going to outweigh the benefit. You can't make a profit, and that's the game plan. That's the game plan. You wait that hard out and let it happen. There is no reason these guys should be doing this right now. So you reduce the competition for the dollars to save Cordish. You create an unfair playing field to save Cordish. All right? You go ahead and wait Ed Hart out so that this place falls down to the ground. I mean, you make it less attractive, make it unaffordable. You level it, and you make it a parking lot. Whether it makes money as a parking lot or not is irrelevant. You've just eliminated a couple of million dollars that parents would be spending on their kids that you're hoping to go into 4th Street Live Casino. That's the deal. Ed Hart's getting screwed every which way but loose, all for the greed of Bashir Abramson, their Democratic Mafia friends. That drives me nuts. Would you disagree with that?
Well, I say I don't know.
You don't like my terminology, I know.
I don't know. I don't know if they're just doing it passively, if they're just doing it for whatever reason. But as I said, I tip my hat to Ed Hart. The man's got more patience than I do. I mean, if I had access to $150 million or something, or I was that foursome or whatever, mm-hmm. I'd say, you know what? You're right. I got better places. The first thing I would probably do is look at it and says, you know, why am I even pissing around with you people? I'm going to go buy a small island, build myself a nice house on it. I'm going to buy a condo.
But did you see the story yesterday?
I'm done with this stuff. You know, but he keeps trying. But he's also trying to smooth it over. Sometimes I think he does it. You know, and you got to wonder if at some point he does it. Maybe he knows what the game is. And he knows the minute he lays down and stops trying to get it going, that things just they roll over and everybody gets their way. Maybe on the flip side, maybe Ed Hart's looking at it thinking, you know, I'm not going to make it that easy for you. I'm going to go on Mandy Connell's show. I'm going to go on TV. I'm going to flaunt the fact that I was the only bidder. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to put the numbers out there. The hell was, you know, and I give that mistake. A lot of times when deals like this are cut, you don't know how much money's going. And once again, a hat tip to Ed Hart. He's putting it out there. He's telling everybody exactly what the bid was. He's like, look, this is what my bid was. There's no closed door. It's like, this is what my bid was, and I'm putting it out there for everybody to see it.
Well, and then yesterday, Ed Hart, you know, he gave one more conciliatory gesture, and I say conciliatory gesture, and I really do. Yesterday it was announced that he and his wife were going to put together a $250,000 challenge grant to Louisville Public Media. And what this grant is it's a new unit was going to be put together. It's going to be called the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. They're going to have a 3-year budget of $1.5 million. This challenge grant of $250,000 is going to cover, you know, half of the first year's budget. The Louisville Public Media has to raise the other $250,000 before they launch the project. Now, this sounds well and good, too, right? Great man of the community. And then I sit here and I think about it later today, and I love Ed Hart, and I love how hard he works to do everything. But why would you give $250,000 to the Louisville Public Media, which is going to, those are the people who operate the city's three public radio stations, in the interest of what you want to pursue as nonpartisan, high quality investigative journalism, whose sole mission is to serve the public interest, when we all know that public radio, your NPRs and your other ones here, all right, these public radio stations here in Louisville are pure liberals. There's nothing nonpartisan about what they do. So I'm wondering if this wasn't a conciliatory gesture for Ed Hart. Maybe he was told if he did something like that, he'd gain more favor. I don't know, and I'm not trying to accuse anything here. But the more I thought about that today, the more I thought that this was an interesting situation, that you would choose to give $250,000 to a liberal organization who has already proven they can't be nonpartisan. And here's something for Ed Hart. You want to help a nonpartisan, real investigative journalism? then you need to contact me at 502-417-5383. And as you know, I'm not joking about that. We have been about as nonpartisan as anybody in this city. I've taken on the Republicans like Todd Lally. I've taken on the Democrats like Jim King and Judy Greene. I take them all on. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. But we have made a difference in this community that nobody else has. You want to help fund somebody that's going to be nonpartisan and is going to do the hard, high-quality investigative work, that's where he needs to spend his money. So this whole thing with the Louisville Public Media has got me a little bit puzzled. But it's Ed Hart's money. I'm not telling him how to spend it. I just think it's an interesting paradox, that's all. You know, Ed, man, we're already, this is the fastest hour on radio tonight. We are already out of time. I don't want to spend a lot of time on overdrive. I've got some personal commitments in a half hour. So let's go and try to wrap this up, man. What's your final thoughts?
Well, you know, final thoughts, I guess I always like, you know, go back to the first issue. And it gets to the, and even my hardcore liberal and some of my hardcore, you know, neocon type friends, and they all agree. And it's funny, but both sides always agree that, you know, every election should have at least a choice. And the way Kentucky politics is structured, you know, two signatures, it's embarrassing. It should be embarrassing to people that there, in some cases, people are unchallenged. And you know, what the hell, I'm with you on that. It's like, guys, you just got to start putting people up. I mean, take it from a guy who's from a party that doesn't have many people, and it's oftentimes has a threshold that's 250 to 5,000 times, or 2,500 times higher than your threshold. It's like, you know what? Find somebody, put them on the ballot, buy them a pizza or something, you know, for their troubles. I don't know, But yeah, it is, especially when you've got candidates like Shanklin that are going to go unchallenged. That is just that's not just an embarrassment for a party that's not putting anybody up against. That's an embarrassment for the community. That's basically saying that is the absolute best we've got.
I agree, man. I agree totally. We have got to find a way to get people inspired. And you know, as much as I sit here, like the District 12 race, for example, with Rick Rosenberg and Rick Blackwell, I don't think Rosenberg has a shot in hell. I don't think that he has what it takes to be a Metro Council person right now. But I think Rick Rosenberger is a good guy. I really do. I think he's got the right intentions. But you know what? He's got cojones. He put his name out there knowing he was going to take some hits and take some risk. And I respect the hell out of that. Why don't we have that in these other races? That's what I don't get. I'm with you there. We have to find a way to challenge people to get involved. You know, do I like people like Brian Simpson taking on Larry Clark, for example, in the 46th state? No, I don't. Simpson, to me, is nowhere near prime time, and he's never going to be. All right? I think we've proven that.
I happen to like Brian, you know. And
not a matter of liking Brian. We're talking politics.
Yeah, I give him credit for it. Now, granted, I think the biggest problem there is Larry Clark's people are – he's dug in, and he's got people everywhere, you know,
The biggest problem there is that Brian's lucky he's not in jail today over that whole fiasco working with daggone Brent McKim and the JCTA and working with the UFCW and last year when they spent all of that money on his behalf. And he violated the law knowingly and willingly to do so. That's a scary situation when that's the first big decision you have to make is how to do things as a candidate when you're warned not to do that kind of a situation. And Brian Simpson was warned about who he was dealing with. I warned him personally. Now, if he continued to go down that path and deal with the people that would put him in that position, it's amazing he's not in jail. The fact that his name is still on the ballot should be alarming to most people. And the point I'm trying to get at is we're going to have people who don't need to be in office. But that doesn't mean that the incumbents should have a free ride. It's up to us to do the due diligence to decide whether these people are worthy of our vote or not. But at least give us a choice that we can research. Give us a choice that we can look at and give us a choice we can hold accountable.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, getting down the line, he's, of course, being a libertarian and having seen the Red Star purge that took place, I think it's up to the parties, too, to make themselves more inviting. I mean, you know, let's face it, a hardcore, you know, higher-income, coddling Republican Party, you know, neocons and whatnot, if that you're not going to attract a voter or any, very many constituents. You know, they always talk about the big tent. I think the parties need to be more welcoming. They need to not engage in the purges that they sometimes engage in, you know, in order to maintain control and some sort of purity. It's like, guys, you know, it's a diverse city. We're not even a big city, but it's diverse. And, you know, you've got to be more inclusive, and you've got to be receptive to people who maybe don't toe that exact line, or you're going to end up with no candidates. You know? And you've got to be supportive, too. We've seen a lot of cases lately where, you know, Brooks Wicker comes to mind, where it's like, my God, is anybody helping this man raise money?
Well, you've got to be deserving of that money, and that's always been my problem. You know, I've ran a couple of campaigns as a candidate myself. You know, I haven't had any money. You know, nor did I expect to get any money. You know, if your sole purpose in running as a candidate, you know, is to have somebody else just feed you a bunch of money so you can buy the airtime and everything else, and you're running for the wrong reason. Really, truthfully, I know money buys elections because you can buy advertisements. But when you're a new guy to the game, or you're a guy that's not trustworthy within your own circle, why would anybody invest that kind of money? You bring up Brooks. That's one thing I talked with Dale about last night for a couple of minutes on air. And he came on. He wanted to talk about how Brooks Wicker is not getting any money. The Republican Party has turned their back on him and all these other things. And while he's right, they have. You also have to look at a candidate. As a businessman, and you qualify, you know, are you going to throw bad money out the window just to throw bad money out the window? Or are you going to expect a return on your investment? If you're going to invest in Brooks Wicker, you at least have to know that he has a shot. Or, you know, and I don't mean a shot to win the election, but I mean that he has a – what's a good way to put this? That he's at least credible. There's nothing credible about Wicker. The hole he's got right now financially is a hole that he dug 4 years ago or a couple of years ago when he ran the last time. He wasn't credible then, and he's playing all of this crazy ultra-right-wing Christian conservative junk out there that nobody wants to hear. He is his own worst enemy right now. That's why he doesn't have the money, because he doesn't have any substance. That's Brooks Wicker. So I've got no problem with that. My point I'm trying to get at is, though, we need a choice, and Brooks is a choice. I commend you for standing up and being a choice. But I don't want to equate, you know, you're not standing behind this candidate and giving him all your money, you know, to the fact that they'd have anything whatsoever to do with a choice. We have a choice where to spend our money, too, right?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the thing that gets me is, like, look, the Republican Party's pretty prominent in the Louisville area. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me, especially in the era of negative campaigning, that they'd want to put up at least a little money just to throw some rocks at Yarmouth, you know, since that's his opponent. But, you know, they're getting nothing. And like I say, it's just it's disappointing. I wish the parties were more inclusive. I wish the parties were getting to have the litmus test they have. And, you know, they could grow the parties, and they could at some point, you know, get candidates. Maybe at that point every race was contested because, you know, you had somebody who knew that somebody had their back before they put their name on the line, and somebody's going to help them a little bit. But apparently that doesn't exist, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you what
we could see.
My first race was for mayor of Louisville in 2006. I put my name on the line. Nobody had my back. Nobody funded a damn thing. I went completely outside the party and became an independent just to run in that race. And why did I do that? I didn't do that because I had any grand illusion that I was actually going to win that race, although I did quite well for an independent. Okay, I had no grand illusion of that. What I did have a grand illusion of is this is my community. The two candidates at that time, including Jerry Abramson, were not going to sit here and talk about the real issues and tell us what we really needed to hear and tell the truth. The issues had to be relevant so people had a choice. And I accomplished that. I didn't do it because I had thousands of dollars behind me, because I didn't. I wasn't able to accomplish the votes with any money because somebody bought me campaign ads. I made a difference in that election. I got more votes as an independent than anybody, and I got a hell of a lot more votes than they tried to give me credit for, because I've got the video to prove it, okay? But the reality is, if you're going to run for office, run for the right reasons. If you're going to run for office and just whine because you don't have the money, then get the hell out of here. As much as I want that second person on that ballot, and there's plenty of good people out there to run for office, but everybody has this misconception in their head that you got to have money to run for office. It takes $50 filing fee to run for most of the offices on a local election. $50. You don't know what's going to happen. Get off your butt, spend the $50, get the signatures, fill out the paperwork, go door to door and ask for help. Ask for a vote. Don't ask for money. I didn't spend all my time fundraising and asking for money. Ironically, I've spent more time in the last 2 weeks, and I've got to mention this, folks. We are having a fundraiser right here at MVM Media because we have to. I've been self-funding this show for 6 years. The bank's broke. It's that simple. So we need to raise $5,000 to upgrade equipment and do a few other things that are necessary to make sure the business runs smooth. But, you know, I've done more announcing that in the last 2 weeks than the same kind of announcement I just made that I have done total in the two or three elections that I've run asking for money. Now, where's the focus? To win, to represent the people equally, fairly, in the way that we deserve to be represented, or to get the money for somebody to buy your election? And we wonder why our congresspeople and our elected representatives are bought and paid for? That's scary, Ed. It really is. We got to go, man. I'm not kidding you. This is going to cut us off in a few minutes. Ed, thank you so much. By the way, real quick, how did everything go with the daughter last night? Everything work out well?
Yeah, as far as we know, you know, the totals aren't in, but she's raising money for a service project for a Lincoln Elementary. It's you know, West End type of school, and it's, you know, poor Smoketown type school, and their arts and music program could use some help. So that's the one she found. So there you go.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you.
She set her goals, and, you know, she's got a few other little tricks up her sleeve. She's ingenious. And so she's going to see how much she can raise, and I said, what are you going to do? Buy like the Ted Nugent, a 5-guitar army or something? Just like, no.
Well, do me a favor. Send me the information on that and how anybody can help. And we'll get an announcement on the air tomorrow night. It's too late tonight. We'll get an announcement on the air tomorrow night. Maybe we can help. I mean, you know, we talk about education and wanting to help our students, especially in the poor neighborhoods. Now's a great opportunity. So get with me on some information. We'll see if we can't do anything to help you out. In the meantime, folks, that's
all right.
A wrap. Man, that's a quick. Went way over. Wasn't supposed to do that tonight. Oh, well, I'm in trouble as usual. But that's a wrap.
Uh-oh.
Folks, have a great night. Ed, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you on Monday at
the
latest, all right?
All right.
Take care, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, folks. We'll see you later.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything.
live.